officially begun. Okay. So we'll do more intros later, but I want to introduce the topic tonight. First, I want to tell you guys how my weekend went. It's very illustrative. It sounds like I'm bragging, but it illustrates the goal that I have for you guys. And you don't have to have this goal, but it's something that I've been doing a lot of thinking about today. I've been quite ponderous today as I've been sharing with the slaves. This weekend, on Friday night, this was underwear night. This is one of many men that marched up and wanted to be flogged and paddled by me. Then, this is Larry after I worked him very rigorously. This is Bob out on the town at Bear Night. And what we did at Bear Night was very intimate, but everybody in the bar knew we were there. Okay, Sunday was the benefit over at the Eagle. The Hole. And all the cutest boys were marching up saying, okay, I'm ready, flog me. And I would pull their pants down, and I would flog them in front of everybody, and everybody wished that they were me and all that. Okay, brag, brag, brag. The bottom line is that I want that kind of popularity for any man that wants that for himself. Because the topic tonight is ethics. Okay, and we're going to talk about that. Because if my reputation was as a brute, as a harmful man, then nobody would come anywhere near me. How do I know that? Because there have been many times in the past where someone who is known to be a brute and a harmful man would enter a crowded bar, and I would look around and I would realize everyone had gathered in a tight crowd around me and left lots of airspace around him. This has happened more times than I can count because they want to feel safe and they come to me because they know that I have that reputation. One time I was at a benefit at the Eagle, and there was a well-known local leather man, and he was helping with the benefit. And also the theme of the evening was celebrating another man's 20 years in the kink community. Well, the MC, this well-known leather man, was drunk. And he was raising money for charity by paddling people. Whack, whack. Well, in the Eagle, they've got a stockade. where you put the neck and the wrist through, you know. Well, as he's paddling this guy, at no point is he checking in with this guy. And the crowd, full of drunks, is saying, hit him harder! Suddenly he's hitting him harder and harder until the guy in the stocks blacks out and collapses and is hanging by his neck. And everybody's frantically trying to get him free, but it jammed because he's hanging there. And so then I lifted the guy up to hold him horizontal while they were struggling with the stupid stock. Well, I chewed that guy out like crazy. He went off to the side while we're doing that and got another drink and just stayed over by the bar while we're rescuing this other guy. And I made a huge public fuss. And he says, I don't know what you're talking about. That was his defense. Now, obviously, that's not nice. Another guy here in town, in San Diego, is well known as the wrong kind of predator. His thing is he likes to find innocent, tender victims on the internet. The internet does not contain police. It does not contain ratings systems. Someone who is starving for a sir will read a recon profile, go, wow, he's in my neighborhood. Or, wow, I would travel across 3 state lines to be with him. Because they're pretty desperate. You know, they really want a sir. And the guy's got all these great qualifications. He's said all the right things. And they have exactly one session with him, and they're so traumatized that they're not willing to try it again for 17 years. How do I know that? They tell me. This particular guy here in San Diego, I never see him with a submissive. He has a husband, too. But I never see him with a submissive more than once. And when I talk to the submissive afterwards, they're so upset. They're so upset. You know, it took him days to recover physically from what happened. So this particular guy got banned from coming to any of my events because of two things that he did. We were having an event, and this really fun, cute little guy looked just like Santa Claus. And every time that there was something fun going on, he was right in the middle of it. Well, he thought that this one particular other guy was really hot and started just kind of, you know, hopefully following the guy around, trying to figure out a way to break the ice and have a chat with them. Well, then the guy goes into the non-Santa goes into the bathroom, comes out, spits in Santa's face without saying anything to him, and just leaves. Okay, that's one. Two, we're having a fun evening, and there was flogging demonstrations going on. Well, this guy comes in with his single tail whip, gets really drunk, and starts whipping the go-go boys against their will with a single tail, whacking them on the neck, whacking them on the arms, whacking them on the legs, and the boys were begging him to stop, and they had to go run into the bathroom and blockade themselves in because he wouldn't listen to them. Well, I busted him with the manager, and I got the longest hate mail from him, and I didn't care. And my response to him was, thank you for your truth, and it's nice to know, you know, where you're coming from, and you're banished from ever coming to any of our events ever again. Oh, he hated that. But, you know, it's somebody has to be the grown-up. Because otherwise, the law of the jungle prevails. I'm not saying that anybody here has to do what I do. I'm a big alpha, you know, and I'm a huge man. I get away with a lot of shit whenever somebody starts pulling crap. If I'm in a movie theater and somebody's disrupting it, I get up and I go over to them and I say, I did not pay money to listen to you. It is time for you to shut up now. They start sassing me and everybody around me starts applauding. And if they really start getting to it, I say, the only thing a bully respects is a bigger bully, and here I am. They don't know what to say to that. But let's move on. So let's talk about ethics. See, one of the things that I had you guys do, and I should have prepared better, is study that article online. It was on real leather fetish relationships, whatever the hell it is. I am one of the most popular leathermen on earth, really. Now, that's a pompous-ass thing to say. But if I stand in one place at Folsom Street Fair, and many tens of thousands of people are passing by, I get people come up to me all the time. They want to give respect. They want to love me. That's a good thing. Doesn't get me laid. Doesn't get me paid. But the reason why I'm respected, I write a lot of articles. I've posted over 1,500 articles on the internet. I'm old. I probably have repeated myself a few times in there. I've never intended to. But the point is, I'm known for being a proponent of the idea that even the most hardcore, sadistic, outrageous, way the hell out there dom top can still be sweet. Because the pendulum has to swing. That yes, you can be hardcore over here at this extreme, but you also have to be vulnerable. You also have to admit when you're wrong. You also have to be able to break down. It's very important. Because, as I've said in other articles, Tom Fenlon is a shitty role model. Shitty. Really shitty. Because it's all one note. Ding, ding, ding. Hot sex. And it's nice. But after a while, you notice that they never show those same guys the morning after the fuck party out in the backyard picking up dog poops. It doesn't show them crying in remorse, as men must sometimes, and admitting that he fucked up. It doesn't show the full range of experience. We are not one note, we are symphonies. In order to be respected, you have to be true. And being true means being vulnerable sometimes. That's radically against the idea of how, you know, leathermen really should be, you know, dom top should be. But the fact is, you've all heard people joking, the bottoms joking about, oh God, I can't believe that guy came up to me in the bar and he says, kneel down to me, slave, I own you. Yeah. And they all laugh at him and walk away. He doesn't know any better. He has no idea what an idiot he looks like because no one's loved him enough to tell him. In order for someone to want to submit, especially for long term, you have to earn their respect every day. You have to be true. You have to be as transparent as water. You have to be vulnerable when it's time. You have to be tired when it's time. You have to be crabby and unreasonable and then clean up after yourself afterwards. But you also have to let your light shine as strong as it can when it's true. Doesn't mean you can get away with being harmful. With all my collared boys, I never turn into somebody else. And I make them that promise when I first begin with them. Letting the pendulum swing matters. Because as males, I mean, raise your hand if you've ever been told in your life that men should not cry, you know, or the big boys don't cry. Okay, that's a huge burden upon us. The problem is, we grew up with this whole cowboy mentality of, you know, how males should be and how women folk should be and how the two are totally separate and should never come together and all that. Well, because of the internet, we're learning the truth of the matter, that men can ask for help, that men can be at their worst and have to find some way back from it by reaching out for support. It took me the longest time to get to the point where I could cry again, and I have no shame about that. You guys are going to see me cry. I mean, not tonight, maybe, but, you know, when it's time, it'll happen. Because I'm passionate. I care a lot. And I have no shame about that. And that's what causes people to trust me. I'm a big, scary fucking Dom Top. So how do I establish trust with a capital T with utter strangers? Well, my technique this last Sunday at the hole. So I went to somebody who knew me, who I flogged before. I said, I need to get the crowd started. I need to build the interest. Would you be willing to bottom for me? Sure, of course. You know, hell yeah. You know, I was ready for it. Gimme. Oink, oink. Well, a lot of heads turned. But what they saw went, I was convincing the logical portion of their brains that I must be a hell of a guy because I was so sweet to them. Even though I'm flogging them and, you know, dumping ice water on their backs and making them scream and all the rest of this stuff, they're watching those men melt into my arms afterwards and thank me over and over again and, you know, show such gratitude and joy. Well, then other people come up and say, I think I'm willing to trust you. Well, you've seen it. You know, you've seen it many times where people say, okay, I'm ready. This is my first time. I'm handing it over to you. I'm betting, Ian, that when you flog somebody that's never been flogged before, they thank you and they will remember it long after all of us are dead. You know, seriously, that the ripples will extend outward because of the powerful, manifest energy transfer and immense amounts of ecstatic joy that you brought into their life. They may never see you again, but like I said, they will go forth and create ripples themselves because they'll still bless you 40 years from now. You know, that's important because as a trustworthy, you know, let's get back to the whole Boy Scout thing. Trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind. That's true for us, too. You know, despite the trip, well, not so clean, but reverent. You know, being able to be a good man, an admirable man, a lovable and respectable, an honorable man, that's what we need. I've given this talk many times within some of your hearing. But I will repeat it, how important it is that we step out of porn as a role model. Like I said, Tom of Finland, you know, it's hot, it's sexy, but there's so much more. See, as men, very likely we did not get anything close to this sort of talk from our own fathers. My father, I speak for myself, I can't remember a single thing he ever taught me. It was of no interest to him. But that's us, that's me, that's myself. But there's a lot of stuff that we're going to be talking about during these lessons, such as what it's like to get older. That's kind of an important talk. We'll talk about the benefits and the drawbacks, but just so that you're informed, so that you know what's coming, you know, so that you can plan for it. The reason why is that they're having such a rocking good time that they're kind of focusing on that now. And that's as it should be. What I told him, as I said, be young, be beautiful, create happy memories now while you have the chance. Because that will pass. You're going to get older. You're not going to be so driven by your testicles. You know? That happens to us. We're just like, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that. Well, they've been monogamous for 11 years now, and I'm not going to go too much deeper into it. Let them speak for themselves. But the fact of the matter is that
Every man has the right to liberate himself. Our whole culture has said, don't be that way. It said, calm down. Don't, you know, don't scare the horses. You know, it's like when you go to the Eagle and guys are dying to suck dick, but they can't because some woman has come in. They're inhibited by her mere presence. They don't know that she'd be like, yeah, you know, more, more, suck it deeper. You can go deeper than that. You know, she would never think of cock blocking them, but they are so programmed by women saying shame, shame. And they never came to completion on that particular part of their life, so they can't relax. But see, when we are at our best without shaming, when we're not being abusive, when we're not laying our shit on other people. For example, okay, the term racket can mean, in social circumstances, a racket is someone's behavior that works for that one person but nobody else. Like, oh God, there he goes again. You know, you've seen that in whatever way. Individuals start pulling shit where they make it all about them. Okay, that's what's a racket. But see, when we don't do that, when we don't pull a racket on each other, when we cooperate, when we add energy to each other's efforts, when we create magic together, it's just extraordinary. And I'm not talking about just one-on-one. One of the things that I taught them when I was counseling them as a couple was how to have a truly successful, every time, multi-way sexual play time. Two ways, three ways, four ways, five ways. It's very simple. Somebody has to take responsibility. That's all. If everybody's just sitting around looking at each other, I don't know what you want to do. I don't know what you want to do. Two bottoms do not make a top. Somebody has to drive. Somebody has to grab the steering wheel and say, this is how it's going to go. The easiest thing in the world, when you have the nature of being a dom top who owns who he is to just say, let's do this. Okie doke. So I need to talk about that. I've written articles about this, about the culture of okie doke. When someone speaks with kindness and with authority, just saying, everybody, it's time to do this. Everybody goes, okie doke, and they go do it. I mean, I've talked about this many times where every time that happens, if someone does it with intention, where you say, okay, I want a really good result from this. I want this to end out great, so I've got an idea. Let's try this. Well, people are desperate to try that. Sure. Okay. Gimme. Because, as I've said before, we do not give ourselves permission to have a good time, usually. But if you own your own power, you step into your power, you find out how big and strong your wings are, and then you start using it, well, everyone else is glad. Like I said, it causes a transformation in everyone present. Well, that includes in sexual circumstances. So you're in a three-way relationship. I mean, three-way sex play, let's say, or four-way, or five-way, or whatever. And someone just says, I'd like to see you suck that dick a lot deeper than that, dude. I know you can do it. Well, then, like, oh boy. Well, again, what you're doing is you are causing the fears, the history, the old harms that want to come rising up to the front saying, well, I don't know, maybe he thinks I'm too this way or not enough that way. Well, all that noise goes out the window like, oh boy, I get to peg out. And, you know, that highly respectable sir just told me to, oh boy, gimme. It has a huge effect. Well, I told this, and they have been rocking out. I mean, I get messages all the time saying, you wouldn't believe what happened last night. You know, they were going at it for 20 hours with three other guys. It's like, oh, to be young again. yeah, I remember those days.
What impresses me about your philosophy here is the sex positiveness of it.
Yes.
Taking away the shame.
Yep.
Taking back the power. Acknowledging that we are men. Mm-hmm. And that we love to, most of us love to have sex. And it's a good and wonderful thing. And not to be burdened by a puritanical Victorian era load of bullshit.
Yeah.
Is laid on us. And to act ethically and to have a great time and to enjoy life. Mm-hmm. And that's all there is.
One of the books that I'm going to make available to you guys, I'll send you the link. It is called Sex at Dawn, DAW. Anybody here heard of it?
Oh, yeah. It's excellent.
Yeah, well, you guys know it. Yeah, I've made sure you know about it. Yeah, a couple of slaves do read that when I order them to. It landed like a bomb about 6 years ago. it freaked the shit out of all the people who've been trying to tell us that monogamy is natural. I'm here to tell you now, it is not fucking natural. Not at all. And they have sociological proof. They did the necessary work. They did it all very scientifically, and absolutely there's no controversy about it at all. They were right. If monogamy was natural to us, why is it the death penalty in so many countries? Why would we need to enforce that? It's like, well, it's just natural. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. It's not an aberration. The reason why, this is me giving my opinion. I've done this many times, and sometimes somebody in the room will flip out because they're so invested in the alternate idea. It's called the received wisdom in the book. That which we have been taught so many times, it's been pounded into our heads. You go into the supermarket, you go to the checkout counter, and there's a rag called National Enquirer right on the cover. Brad betrays Janet. It's loaded language. It's framing that says, if you have sex with anyone other than that one person, you are bad, you are judged, and you should be, you know, driven through the streets, you know, beaten with burning whips, you know. If you go to the romance section of a bookstore, usually on Amazon, because regular bookstores just don't exist anymore, but you go to the romance section, and it's all the same thing over and over and over again, which is that it shows a hot pirate on the cover or some other wild creature. Over and over again, it's where the rough, out-of-control male, he's a pirate, he's a wild animal in the forest, he's a whatever the hell he is, but through the love of and control of a woman, he becomes civilized and what the woman wants. And you never see the opposite. You never see men's books that say, oh, that wild woman, I finally tamed her and got her to calm down and, you know, and settle down. You know, it's always one direction.
Oh, that's Shakespeare's. But.
Well, yeah, yeah. Yeah, there you go. Well, that was The Taming of the Shrew, and remember how that turned out. The whole romance novel bullshit does not apply, especially to males. See, back in grade school, high school, you know, junior high, we're told, remember I was talking about the prom, that, you know, women don't want to have sex and that we need to pry it out of them with chocolates and seduction and a ring and all that other shit. And it completely blows past the fact that women like to have sex. The book that I'm recommending that you guys will get the link for, Sex at Dawn, explains why our penises are shaped the way that they are versus how a gibbon's is. Okay? We have a head on our penis because that's designed to move another man's cum out of the way so that yours can be effective during the gangbang. Human beings shriek and holler during sex. Oh, what if the mountain lion hears you? Well, what if there's 40 of you and you can chase the damn mountain lion away because you got a 40, you know, person gangbang going on? Shrieking and hollering. Well, the wildlife learns to stay the hell away because we've got fire and we're having, you know, and can drive them away. Well, the point is that we are not wired to be monogamous. Speaking about gay-male relationships, and I'm wondering, we've got to get back to ethics, but speaking of gay-male relationships, I've seen it, you've seen it. Couples been together 2.5 years, break apart. 2.5 years, break apart. Why? Because Brad betrayed Jim. Mm-hmm. And of course, society says that means, you know, you get the dogs and I get the house. Well, what the hell? What if you can make new agreements that don't have to be about puritanical, you know, ideas about how things should be? Because we've had thousands of years of that kind of programming about what sex is about, what relationships are about. And now, because people are doing a lot more communicating about what life is really like, okay, you guys familiar with Club X here in San Diego? It's a pansexual club. That means that it's mostly heterosexual people with a few transsexual folks, with a few lesbians, with a few gay men, not a lot. Well, they're packed with multi-way relationships, where you'll meet a guy and he says, this is my wife, this is my girlfriend, and this is her boy, and this is his daddy. It's very common in the kink community, always has been. because as outlaws, you know, as bizarre people, it frees us to find out what's really going on. I was in a three-way relationship for 2.5 years. We all slept in the same bed. I slept in the middle. I got to have each head on my shoulder, and I felt like a king. It worked great until one of them way got into too much drugs, and unfortunately, he had to go. But right now, honestly, I'm in a four-way relationship. You know, truthfully, honestly. Because my very vanilla husband has no interest in doing what I really crave to do, kinky-wise. Living with me is like sitting too close to a bonfire. I'm very intense. Dennis gets as much of me as he can handle, and he says, go play, go play, go play! Mm-hmm. Well, then, Bob, my slave, has a husband, and he's honest with him. You know, doesn't rub his face in it, but, you know, his husband knows where he is and why. Same with Larry. Well, Bob, Larry, and Dennis adore each other. They're the best of friends. I live a very satisfying life, and I own that I created that. I created the possibility that this could happen, and we don't have drama, do we?
I hate him, though.
Yeah, right. No. But see, at first, Bob, and I'm talking out of turn, but Bob thought, what if this is a problem? What if he's trading up? What if he's throwing away last year's model and going for something new? And I said, no, you misunderstand. I'm getting you a brother. And it was true, wasn't it? Yeah, very much so. Because they can talk about stuff that they can't talk with anybody else about. And when the three of them start trashing me in public, I have to go, I'm going to go to the bathroom. Nothing more uncomfortable than having them all say, oh, God, when he does this, you know. But whatever. But anyways, it's a unique experience. So getting back to it. So why I'm talking about all this, I'm going to bring it all back home, because I do tend to wander. What they like about me is that I am a very ethical man. This is important. Of all the things that we talk about, this is number one, is about ethics, because we need to have a solid foundation of trust, because the world does not want to trust us. You're throwing that flog around? When I got at the hole the other day, over and over again, I'd have the flog over my shoulder, and they say, oh, I can't stand to watch stuff like that because I can't stand pain. It's like, pain? I said, feel this. It's not about pain. They go, oh, but I've seen, you know, the Passion of the Christ, and they're covered in blood, you know? Which is torture porn, by the way. And so in this article that I had you guys study, which was What Being a Dom is About, A Submissive's Perspective, it says, being a dom is about knowing when to be selfish and selfless. A man who is a dom, who is only selfless, is what's known as a service top. Many people will scorn that. Sometimes that's the way, that's how they are. The problem is that when someone is selfless all the time, it puts them at the bottom of the list. In my particular case, I call it St. Anthony Syndrome. My given name is Anthony. Where I'm so busy taking care of everybody else that I'm not taking good care of me. Nobody likes that because I'm never happy when I'm in that position. I'm always off balance. There are times where I have to be selfish. First of all, the slaves really like it when I'm selfish because I'm selfish in a moral way. I'm not just, you know, using them to, you know, I'm not treating them like shit. I'm just treating them like, yeah, submit. Yeah, ha ha ha, I like it. You know, I'm over-exaggerating here, but the whole idea is when they bathe me, when they wash between my toes, because otherwise I forget to do it myself and then I get athlete's foot, when they run after me and say, sir, you forgot your sunglasses on the table, you know, or you just missed your exit because I'm so busy with my mind on the far horizon I forget to pay attention to where I'm going or whatever. I need that kind of support as a sir. I'm kind of special that way. I mean, any sir needs that. But when I am lustily having my fun, well, there is, on the other side, submissives that really like that. When I go for the gold, when I have fun, when I'm not trying to be a service top. I mean, I try and put it, do it as a balance. You know, I have that nature of being St. Anthony sometimes. But I like to let the pendulum swing. I like to let find myself in the balance of whatever's right for the moment. And that's why they keep coming back. Yay. Being a Dom is about being a keeper of promise and of peace. Well, this, okay, one of the things that I've been saying for years, that I tend to attract two kinds of men in my life. Boy Scouts and traffic cops. That's my terms. Boy Scouts, by nature, are givers. They're Boy Scouts, you know, trustworthy, loyal, helpful, all the rest of that stuff. But one problem with guys like that is that they learn early that if you are too open, men will take advantage of you. They'll say, ooh, you feel like giving, I feel like taking. And so they get burned by that, and they learn to hold back. Well, what I am is I'm a traffic cop by nature. I'm a peacekeeper. I'm the one who, if I'm at a big public event, it's not my event, but something starts to go wrong, I go towards it. Say, whoa, calm down. Let's handle this. It's my nature. I can't help it. I don't normally say this, but there are six people in this world that would be dead if I had not had that nature. And that's just true. Pardon me. Yes, it's still going. The reason why I say that is because I threw myself into danger. Even if there was a really strong likelihood I'd be dead now if I did that thing, but I could not do it. It's just my nature. Now, that seems awfully extreme, but I could name you a good 20 men in the local kink leather community who are also traffic cops. And when we're in the building, everyone else calms down. Not because we're going around shaking our fists in people's faces, but because we hold ourselves in a certain way where everybody calms down, like, ah, grown-ups are here. It's a very odd thing, you know, but it's just natural to us. We can't turn it off. By nature, we want to keep the peace. That's why so many people who have that nature go into the, you know, the military or whatever, because we can't turn that part off. So being a keeper of promises, okay, so one of the things that I talked about earlier was about standing in your truth, being in integrity. In no way do I consider myself to be a perfect man. I have flaws like anyone else. We'll talk more about that. But I do my best to keep my word. If I screw up, I take responsibility for it, and I clean up after myself. I atone. I'm not ashamed to say I fucked up. Because the more you practice being able to say that when it is true, the more you will have respect in this world. As a Dom, as a human being, as a man. Okay. Being a Dom is about being able to know when to be calculated and when to be spontaneous. Now, this is very important. Some of us, by nature, are wired to be more logic-based, and others are much more wired to be Gandalf. Okay, this is very important. Big topic. We could talk a lot about this. I am Gandalf. Whenever you run into a Dom in the kink community who has a 36-page manual that he gives his submissives, saying, this is what I expect, this is how I expect it, that's a different market. There are people that are looking for that as a submissive. I can't be that guy. I'm not detail-oriented. I make shit up. And I'm okay with that. I've been ridiculed for this many times, you know, by people who don't understand me. They misunderstand my motivations because they judge me based upon their motivations, which do not match. We have different wiring. I'm Gandalf because I create magic wherever the hell I go. I don't do it all the time. It'd be exhausting. But those pictures and those circumstances I was telling you about from the last couple of weekends are all me making it up on the moment and trusting my gut. It's really important. So, Bob, when was the last time you saw me act impulsively and I failed? It's a trick question.
Yeah, it is a trick question. No, I don't know that I have. Your instincts about what's the right thing to do now are generally pretty good.
Right. The point is, it's not about me. I'm saying that every man in this room can do the same thing. If you're conscious about it and you're clear about what is possible, that's why I teach these classes. I want you to be aware that not only is it possible, it works really well. All of us have something like this to some degree. And if you have the desire to make magic happen, everyone else is waiting for you to do that. And glad when you do it. Wherever the hell I go, I create spontaneous joy. Eruptions of pleasure and excitement. And people are so damn glad. I don't do it all the time. But I'll tell you one thing. My reputation is such that if I walk into a building full of people in the kink community, immediately everyone turns their bodies towards me. Like, oh boy, a bunch of meerkats. Oh boy, I hope he does something today. I don't know what it'll be, but I know it's going to be good. Because I do crazy shit. I do totally wild, off-the-wall stuff. And it always works out. So we'll talk more about that. Anyways. Okay, being a dom is about being a leader, but knowing when to follow. Anybody have any thoughts about that? Because that one there draws me a blank. I'm not sure what to think about that.
There's always a wiser gentleman than you.
Yes.
In the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to recognize when there's somebody that can teach you something.
Yes.
Even if you know more than that person in some areas, there's something that you can gain from everyone.
Very wise. Thank you, brother. Yay. Good one. Well said. I agree. Do you have any examples about that that you could share?
I'll be looking at one right now.
Oh. I wasn't digging for a compliment. Anybody else? But thank you, though.
Well,
thank
I'm you, gonna, sweet. I'm, if you don't Please. Mind, I'm going to throw in that what just happened here is an example. Because
right.
Ian brought up an absolutely perfect point to, you know, when you were going...
And I got it, and you helped. Thank you. Illustrated the point. Well said. Okay. I think this one's sort of a repeat. Being a dom is about self-gratification and self-sacrifice. Well, I don't always have good perception of when it's time to pay closer attention because, you know, the slave might be, you know, kind of holding back. But I can tell there's something going on, but I'm not quite sure what's different. Because sometimes you have to do something extra special. But being able to get past your comfort zone, like, but I really wanted to do that, and to say, okay, no, we're going to have some us time to know when it's time to do that. When, and that's never a sacrifice, so I'm not sure that that really qualifies, but being able to say, okay, I had some great ideas, I'm letting go of them now because they don't match what the reality is all around me. Would you hit the light switch? Very good. It's really important to be flexible. You know, to recognize that stomping around and saying, I'm the boss of you, is not always the best approach. You know, let's face it, how many men would you respect if they did that? But being able to be a little humble about it, you know, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, I can be as arrogant as any man. You know, I'm used to that. I can get away with being arrogant. But the fact of the matter is that it's something that does not ring true to me. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't. It's not my comfort zone. Because I have a lot more fun when I'm just sweet. I really do. A lot more fun. And I get a lot more hugs and a lot more friendship. Okay, I'm going to bring up the topic of the guy. Oh, Lord. This was at least 20-something years ago. And he wore leather. That's what defined him. He was an older man. And you never saw him outside of leather. He was always dressed up, geared up. And I was driving past a bus stop, and it was the height of summer. It was about 107 degrees and humid. And there he is, frantically wiping his head and holding his master's cap in the other hand, in full leather, on the city streets in full leather. Well, just like many muscle men, he was using it as a distancing mechanism, saying, I'm tough. Your arrows will bounce off of me. You cannot penetrate my, you know, where the scared little boy is inside. And I'm projecting here, but I know that if I was behaving that way, people would say, what's going on with him? That there has to be, yes, it's time to wear the hardcore gear or play in a hardcore way, but there's always the other sides too, and you have to be available for all of it. And if it's not working, figure out why and shift. Okay, so... Being a dom is about being stern and being loving. I'm not sure if stern would be the word. Somebody giggled? I thought I heard somebody giggle. Okay. Being stern and being loving. I'm not sure exactly what to think about that. What do you guys think?
You know, stern is not quite the right word.
Yeah.
I would say strong.
Strong. There's a difference. Yeah, let's go with that. Thank you. That's a better word. I can go with that. Again, there's a big difference between force and strength. When you have strength, you don't need to use force. Strong comes from being true, being as transparent as water from moment to moment to moment. Okay, show of hands. Who here has ever caught me bullshitting? No hands. The reason why is because I time slice. And I would like you guys to figure this out. And if you're not sure, I'll teach you. It means that I'm always in the present. Now, 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 now. I'm always being present to what's happening right now. I'm sharing space with you guys fully authentically. I am metaphorically naked before you. I hold nothing back. The reason why is because we are surrounded by bullshitters. We've got a president who's a really hardcore bullshitter. But the fact of the matter is that people think, well, and okay, here's a good example. I don't know how many of you have been to a leather title holder contest. But one of the things that they do is they give you the question. It's a silly question. Could be anything. They're designed, that question, when you're up on stage and you're running for a title, is to show the content of your character and how light you are on your feet. Someone asks you a question. If your ass was an animal, what would it be and why? And the man who stands there, frozen, like, oh crap. What he's doing is he is sorting through, well, what do they want to hear? What do they want to hear? But he's not being true to what he wants to say. Mm-hmm. Oh, I could never say that. They don't want to hear that. That'll cause me to, you know, struggle. You know, I mean, that'll make me look bad in front of all those people in the audience, which is exactly the wrong impulse. Because what is needed is what's called top plating. And I'll explain that term. I did not invent that. I learned this many years ago. Imagine you're in a cafeteria, and there is that big stainless steel device on wheels that's got three stacks of plates, and you lift a plate, and the whole stack rises up on springs. And you're ready to go up and get your food, and some knucklehead is in front of you. And they're looking at each plate saying, no, not that one. And they're setting it off to the side. No, not that one. You're going, just pick one and get the fuck out. I want to eat. Well, my urging for everyone who is listening to this is learn how to top plate. Meaning that what is the first response, that is the true response, and it's a good response. That's important. It frees you from constantly having to worry about, well, I could never say that. Well, if as long as you're, this is a good mantra. Okay, this will be on the test, by the way. This mantra is what guides those impulses. If something is true, if it is necessary, and it is kind, say it now. If it doesn't fit in that, don't do it. That's not good for top plating. But if it's true, if it's necessary, and it's kind, it's always right. Every time. People always have their agenda. People are always trying to send you spam. People are always trying to lie to you. You know, you get a message on your computer or on your phone, in an Indian accent. I'm not going to imitate it. You know, I'm not good at that, so I'm not going to try. We've discovered that there's a virus on your computer, you know, and $700 later, they've just emptied out your damn bank account, you know, and you didn't get any real benefit from it. That's what's the scam that's really prevalent right now. I'm telling you now as a computer consultant. They call me frantic, and I say, call the number on the back of your card, cancel payment. When they call you in alarm, you just say, the police have been informed about this scam. Remove me from your list, and they won't ever call back. Okay. Change the password on your computer, too. But the point is that we're surrounded by bullshitters. What makes us stand out when we are at our best, when we are standing in our power, when we are the kind of men that we always wished that we could find in other men, then the world rejoices and people are attracted to you. See, strength, leadership, let's say leadership. Leadership does not come from slamming open the door and saying, I'm the boss of you. That doesn't work. Leadership comes from inspiring other people who want to be the wind beneath your wings. That's how it really happens. That's why I've been so successful. I understand this. I have been hugely successful as a community leader. Anybody who's been watching what I've been doing, you know, I mean, you guys may not have known me back when I was really in my glory days, but right now, I've got a good reputation. And that's because a leader provides. Now, what I'm about to tell you is very important. Okay? And I've said this at the first one. Leadership is no different from being a good dom, you know, like if you're being kinky with somebody, versus being a community leader, versus being the world's highest rated Apple consultant on earth. I treat all my clients as if they were my submissives. I don't beat them. I don't, you know, do any of that stuff. But I take ownership of how things go. I'll walk in the door and I say, let's have some fun. They go, eh? They always have that strong, like, what are you talking about? Well, I have fun because I arrive, everything's all in disarray. And when I leave, everything's wonderful. I've just untangled their lives. I took responsibility for their safety, well-being, and success, and made damn sure that they're happy, and they're dancing around me. I mean, one of my favorite things to do, and this is a dom top thing like crazy, serious control issues, and I love having this kind of control, where I'll arrive at a client's house for the first time, and they're bitter, they're pissed off, and they say, bah, 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 whenever I say something. They disdain what I say. Talk to the hand. They're just not interested in what I have to say. And I stop and I say, how many people have helped you before me? Three. And I'll say, give me your hand. And I say, I take their hand. I say, look me in the eye. They look me in the eye and said, I will take care of you. You can count on me. I will make sure that absolutely everything is perfect. I will not sign off on this job until it's just right, and you'll be so happy. Not only that, I'd make you two bets. One, I'm the last consultant you'll ever need to hire. And two, that when I leave, you're going to dance around me throwing rose petals. They go, yeah, right. I have actual video of three of the toughest nuts to crack dancing around me throwing rose petals. I actually have that.
Do you just carry rose petals with you?
No, in their yard. They'll walk me out. If they don't have rose petals, they walk out to the car with me, hugging me and thanking me repeatedly.
But then you get horrifically expensive.
There's always that. Yeah. My rates doubled about 2 years ago, and nobody seemed to complain. But anyways, moving on. The point is that I reacquainted them with the concept that there are good people out there, that there are people who live by their word. Our word is what represents us in the world. Ethical sirs keep their word, even when it's not comfortable. See, you'll see this out there in the whole leadership gig, where somebody will say, okay, at such and such a time, we're going to have this event. You go to the event, and the producer never shows up, and it's a failure. Well, that producer better not ever show his face again, because he did not keep his word. I created a dance party that was named for me. I did not choose the name. It was called Rampart. On a typical Friday night, we would have between 400 and 600 men, and it was endlessly joyful, unbelievably joyful. It was tribal in the extreme. Well, what made it that way is blood, sweat, and tears on my part. It took me 6 fucking months to get it off the ground. I can't tell you how many times I would have this dance party, and the only people that were there were my closest friends who were being loyal to me. And somebody would come in, they'd look at this huge empty dance floor with a few people in the corner, and they'd turn on their heel and zap out the door. I'd have to use manipulation to get them to come back. I would say, come here. I said, the DJ's about to play a special song, and I'd like you to be a part of this. This next song, and this would be true, I'd say this next song is dedicated to all of our brothers who are no longer with us. And we're going to be dancing with all of our beloved lost brothers in our hearts, because they can't dance anymore, but we will dance for them. Well, who's going to say no to that? And it was true, and we did it with all our hearts. Well, then pretty soon word started getting around, and soon it became this huge smash hit. Well, this was every Friday for 2.5 years. That's a lot of dance parties. I didn't make any money off of it. I would not choose to. I just wanted to create an occasion for joy for a community that really needed it. But in all that time, only one bad thing happened. Out of all those tens of thousands of possibilities, one young guy showed up. He was 29. I knew him, and he was in a shitty mood. He was harassing the people around him. He was yelling at the bartenders. He was arguing with the DJ. He was being a pill. People came to me. They said, this is going on. I said, I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. And I went up to him. I said, come here.
give me a hug. I was like baffled. And while I'm holding him close, I talked quietly just in his ear because it was very noisy and dark and whatever and distracting. But I spoke right in his ear because I didn't want to shame him publicly. I said, I have a request for you. He says, what's that? I said, I can tell you're crabby tonight. It's okay. We're all human. We get crabby. I said, tonight's not a good night for you. I said, however, as you know, I take full responsibility for the safety, well-being in the space. You're kind of harsh on the vibe. That's okay, because my request is you head on home and you take care of your needs. Have a good cry, be with friends, get some sleep, do whatever you can so you can get back to your center. And when you come back next week, I will make you extra welcome, because we love you, we want you here. The place is better when you're around, just not tonight. Head on home. I said, okay. And he came back the next week, and I made a huge fuss over him in a minute, and he never caused a problem again. We'll talk more about the third way in a future class because we're short on time today. But the point is, and I'm going on and on. The point is that I use strength instead of force. I was able to resolve a situation rather than trying to arm wrestle him, you know, with power. You know, I'm going to force you to do my will. Or instead of going up to this man and saying, all right, that's it, you're 86th forever, you're an asshole and we hate you. There's no redemption in there. See, the kind man, the virtuous man always leaves the door open for redemption, because we cannot expect redemption from others unless we're willing to provide it to others. We have to get over ourselves. We have to let other people off the hook, because everybody's doing the best they can. There are people who do not match that, and we know what to do with them. But the point is that the vast majority of people, if I treat you respectfully, you will rise to that. Oh, yes, you will. Imagine me, this big guy you see here. Let's pretend I'm a different person, but I'm very similar physically. And I'm going through the crowd, and I'm shoving people out of my way, going, get the fuck out of my way, asshole. Well, I'm going to get asshole back. Mm-hmm. But if I treat you as someone with majesty and worth and beauty and someone who is the possibility of possibly being my friend for the rest of my life, it transforms the interaction. People rise to that. They're glad. You know, when you're nice, really nice to that woman behind the counter, and she's just been dealing with one asshole after another, it transforms her experience and creates the possibility that she sees the beauty of life again because someone brought sunshine, just for the hell of it. Not saying anybody else should do that or could do that, but it's a blessing. Being a Dom is about being responsible and relatable. Let's talk about responsible. This is a big topic. Drama is the opposite of responsible. Drama has three parts. It collapses if you remove any portion of it. Drama has three legs like a stool, okay? One, victim. Rescuer, persecutor, okay? Drama is a trap. It is what people do when they're not being responsible. It's the opposite of responsibility. My mom was a great drama queen. She loved being a victim. It was the juiciest place to be, because someone who is a victim, a professional victim, who's always at the effect of other people's, you know, behaviors, it's always somebody else's fault. It's never the drama queen's fault, the victim's fault. So that what they want is sympathy. And you've seen this, where somebody is like, ew, what did I just step in? Because you just heard from them. They're saying, I'm really sad because, you know, my roommate kicked me out. Can I come sleep on your couch? Then you find out that you're the 50th person they've approached, because they have no intention of being responsible. They have no intention of making sure that you get what you need. All they want is to get what they need. And when somebody finally figures that out and kicks them out, they go couch surfing to the next couch. Now, obviously, a lot of men are underemployed and unemployed, so of course that's a different case. But someone who does that because they like being able to take advantage of people, you know, they're not being responsible. Okay, we've all met that kind. What they're hoping for is to be able to get rescued by somebody's, oh, you poor thing. They want sympathy. Give me sympathy. Give me, ooh, yum, delicious sympathy. The problem is that it doesn't move the ball forward. There's no growth in it. See, when we're at our best, we're heading on up the hill, the mountain of wisdom. Nobody ever really, truly reaches deep, perfect wisdom, because we tend to die first. But it's the journey that matters. We all go into our little pity pools once in a while. But getting out of them again and heading back up the hill is far more important. It's okay to be a drama queen for a while. We're all human. We all have this culture of victimhood all around us.
You know, it's everybody else doing things against me. But the thing is that the man, I'm speaking for men here, the man who is responsible by nature, who likes being responsible, who rejoices in responsibility, is the opposite of the drama queen. And everyone else gravitates around that man. Everyone is glad because he sets the tone wherever he goes. Everyone else calms down. That's why nothing has ever gone wrong other than what I just told you. At that dance party, I've hosted over 3,000 social events since 1981. I set the tone because I'm a kind, upstanding kind of man that other men want to stand a little bit taller and puff their chests out a little bit more and wag their tails around because they want so much to be those virtues too. I'm a good role model for that. So, anyway, so the way to break out of drama, for anyone who's listening, is to not participate. My mom used to make me crazy back when she was alive. She would call me up and I'd go, oh crap. I'm one of 10 siblings, by the way. I'm the pick of the litter. Anyways, so then she would call me up and, oh, that brother of mine, did you hear what horrible thing he did to me? Oh crap. Because what she wanted more than anything else was for me to say, oh, Mom, I know he doesn't love you, but I sure do. And she'd say, you know, whatever, you know, and then hang up and go get more sympathy from somebody else. And all of us in my family were going crazy with this. And I asked at one of the big seminars that I was going to, I said, how do I get out of this? He explained about drama. And he said, she's looking for you to be a rescuer, to rescue her from her dilemma. Even though it's only a temporary thing, she's going to go find something else. Because they need to be the center of attention. They need to make it all about them. That's how they feel that they're alive. So he told me what to do. So the next time she called me, and by the way, I told all my siblings about this. They started doing it too. She's going, oh, did you hear what that horrible brother said? And so then I'd say, Mom, I love you, and I know that he loves you too. And I trust that the both of you are going to work it out, because you always do. Let's talk about something else now. Just like that. I didn't yell at her, didn't make her wrong, because that immediately puts me on the persecutor list next to my brother. But suddenly she'd say, and then she'd change the subject, she'd go back, and I'd say the exact same words. I wouldn't feed it, and just kept doing it. And she'd go, all I wanted was some sympathy. I'm no longer a sympathy dispenser, Mom. She'd slam down the phone, but it changed our relationship. She didn't want it that way, but I did, because for my sanity. I mean, I don't want to be a rescuer. It's not what my philosophy includes anymore. You know, I'm no longer in the nest and stuck there. I have adult decisions that I can make. So anyway, so that's drama versus responsibility. Responsibility is delicious. It's wonderful. When you're a stand-up guy, you have endless amount of people that want to be the wind beneath your wings. That's where strength comes from. Okay.
Would you say that the pup world is growing because there are puppies who want to be free of the responsibilities of being a human being so that they can truly play with their animal nature, and they can really only do that when they've exchanged that playfulness with a handler who will take responsibility to oversee what's going on so that they can be safe.
I had not seen it that way. And I honor that, and I need to think more about that. I've never thought about that. My impression of pups is different, and it's just in how I see them. I don't hang out with them much, so I don't have that experience. My experience instead is that people are starved for validation. Okay, what I'm doing here with this class is I'm validating you guys. I'm certifying you. I'm letting you know you're on the right track. I like you. I respect you. I know who you are. I see you for who you are. And I gladly, gladly welcome you into my life, into my social circle, and into my trust. Well, how often do we get that? My experience of pups is that who wouldn't want to walk into the room and everybody go, oh, you're so cute. Oh, I want to rub your tummy. I mean, it's nice, but it's not a total answer. But you notice it's young men that are doing this, a lot of young men. Well, I assert that our Larry here has the nature of a pup. He loves being a pleaser. He loves being wonderful. As a grown-up, though, he handles it in a totally different way than, say, a young, inexperienced man might. But being able to be approved of, being able to be petted and loved just for being cute,
And that's what puppies are in the real world, actual four-legged canine types. That's my projection. I don't hang out with a lot of pups. They tend to turn into leather boys when they're around me, so there's that. You know, but I have not had the experience of a lot of irresponsible men. See, I would say irresponsible would alarm me. And I'm not sure if that's what you're saying, but...
I'm talking about throwing off the need to be... responsible in that context.
Right,
means,
right.
I can just go and play with another pup, and I can roll over, and I don't have to have my human trappings. I don't have to be responsible for what I say because I'm going to bark. I don't have to be responsible for my behavior because I'm just going to let what comes naturally. I'm not
going to put
any rules or constraints on that.
I see that. I see your point. And this actually could be said about anybody, really. And I honor everything that you say. I don't disagree.
My experience is that there's always going to be people who try to get as much as they can out of things without giving back. There's always that, you know. And I'm not saying that that's true for every pup that you can see, because then there's the ones that show up that are not that. Okay, pointing. There's those who are not that. Pointing. Yes, Larry.
I kind of wonder if there's also a similarity with baby play or infantilism. Some similarities to that, this attractiveness of giving up some responsibility and being totally free, but also very dependent.
Well, you're not really free to play like that unless you trust somebody's there to be the counterpart.
Right.
And it's the same with like master slave. It's you've got authorities in exchange of obedience for authority, so you're giving up some measure of how your life is going. In an extreme master-slave relationship, you're giving
Thank
up
you
some
for
control of how your life is going because you trust the mentor to be an authority, a better authority on your life than yours is, perhaps. Whereas a daddy will teach the boy how to be a better authority for himself.
Right.
The master will say, "No, that's what I got. That's my role, that's your role," and then you walk together seamlessly as one. Whereas it's authority for obedience, whereas dom and sub is control for more control for giving up responsibility.
Thank you. And that brings up a very good point.
This is my ideas.
It's perfect, and I have no trouble with that. I'm glad you qualified, though. Some masters. There are circumstances, you'll see it at, say, Folsom Street Fair. Do this, do that, do this, do that. And, you know, every moment of their lives is regimented. I'm not that guy. I don't do that. My slaves are extremely responsible. I am not directing them except in fun stuff that I know that they want me to direct them in, that it's erotic, that it's pleasing, that it pushes all sorts of buttons for them. That is the kind of things that I do with them. So I'll go into a little bit more detail, so thank you. I am not a regimented sir. I do not have 32-page, protocol books. But when I do whip out that side of myself, say at the bar the other night, I said, before we went there, I said, the slave will be collared, will be, I don't think plugged, I didn't specify, but sometimes I do, meaning a butt plug, with a cock cage, where his genitals are constrained in a cock cage. And we will bring the shackles and the hood. Okay. The hood is from slickitup.com, and it just has a mouth hole where the nose and the mouth are available. Everything else is covered. But it's spandex, so he doesn't sweat his tits off, because we've got a very formal leather hood, but it just about bakes him. And I need him for later, so I don't want him to faint on me, okay? But anyways, but so then we went there, and what turns him on, gets him excited, gets him like really hot, is protocol in this case. But only in this case, where we're out in public, I'll give some examples. I take these three fingers like a fork, and I poke him on the chest. And he nods, indicating that he's gotten the order, totally nonverbal. It means you will remain in one spot. You can move. You can pivot around 1 foot, but 1 foot has to stay planted. I will be back. Okay. I like doing that in a public circumstance because I'll be over there talking, doing top talk with other tops, and I'll have him standing next to me in full, attention, and I'll be ignoring him, and then I'll park him over against a pole, I mean against a, you know, support, ceiling support, and then just, you know, give him the three fingers on the chest and walk away. And I'll be doing top talk with other guys, and I'll say, do me a favor, walk over there and treat him like he's yours. So they go over to him, they start playing with his nipples, they're talking dirty, they're tickling him a little bit, they're playing with his, you know, his caged cock, they're grabbing his ass and everything, but they're being extremely respectful, because they don't want to offend me. They're just playing, they know that. But he adores that. Or I will say, I'll do a little hand gesture, like I'm lifting up a coffee cup, and that means I wish for a beverage. In my case, it's bubbly water with lime. If I'm throwing around floggers in a bar, I drink zero alcohol, because it's not responsible to get intoxicated when you're throwing around something like that, of any kind. Anyways, so I will be standing there. Let's say he's totally non-shackled and he's unrestrained in any way, but I slap the side of my thigh, and he immediately dives down on his knee pads, down onto the ground, and wraps himself around my leg, starts playing with my dick, you know, whatever. And so then I'm just ignoring him. But he's digging this because, yes, I'm giving him orders, and yes, he's doing it, but it's making him hot. It's making me hot. We're liking it, and it's impressing the shit out of these other tops in the circle around us. What we did, you know, and shame on me, but we went to the Eagle a week ago, and so then I did this symbol here, where I cross my pointy finger and my fuck you finger over each other and go from side to side. That is RR, meaning restroom, I need to piss. Well, I had been sluicing bubbly water and lime through my system for hours, so I needed to piss really badly, but it was clean piss. But I said, we're not going into the bathroom, because there's a long line to the bathroom. I said, guys, gather around. So these guys, you know, other guys stand around to block the view, and I started unzipping him, got down on his knees, and he drank the full load of piss without pausing, just took the whole thing, and was glad to get it. Okay, yes, I was ordering him, but I was ordering him to do what he wanted. I was taking it to the extreme, to the point where he was just so hot that he's been really, really, really sexually turned on since then. And that's a pleasure. But it turns me on too, gets me hot and excited. This slave and that slave have entirely different fantasies, that my fantasies bind us all together. And that I give them what they want, but they give me what I want too. That's how it is, that we're being responsible in this relationship, because they take really damn good care of me, and they're honest and they're honorable. They've never betrayed a trust. They have never, ever, ever done anything that I did not like for them to do, because I made it clear what the parameters are. Okay, I've raised 6 foster sons to full adulthood. That's not a brag, it's just the truth. In each case, I was being the dad that I always wished that I had had. And what that involved is that they always, always knew what the limits were. The limits were never flexible. I did not move the goalposts. I was clear. I expected them to keep their word. I expected them to be responsible. And I always did it in such a way where it was attainable. I always made it so that it was fun, so that they were rewarded for really good behavior. The moment they stepped over the line, I would be clear with them. I didn't make them wrong. I didn't break their spirits. I just said, this is what's going on, and this is why I'm not happy about it. And if they didn't listen, if I got the talk to the hand routine, I would say it again louder. And if they still didn't get it, I would grab them by the shoulders, look them in the eye, and say, this will be on the test. You don't need to do this, and I don't want you to do this, and here is why. Well, one of my sons especially was very resistant to this. He was really, he was damaged pretty hard, long before he met me. But the point is that what really changed his mind was that he went to his counselor. He was still in the foster care system, but he was in my life at that time. We had not yet adopted him. And his counselor said, you have no idea how much you've won the lottery, because you are a gay man who has been taken in by a long-term gay male couple, and they want you to succeed. I said, do you have any idea how many others fail? And she turned his head around, and he started paying more attention, and thank God for that. But anyways, moving on. But well, the point
can, is, can yeah, I make sure you made a leap yes. from what the slaves. You always know what they want, so they, yes. so really, what you're doing is you're ordering them to do what they either yes. will accept with pleasure yes. or what.
Right.
And then you went to your sons, which is a different situation because then you're ordering them what they need, mm-hmm. and
right.
You know, I have a grown I've son, and he got what he needed. But I also had a grown slave, mm-hmm. ex-military, and he got a kind of dishonorable discharge because he was found to be homosexual at right, the time, which right. was not okay. And I ordered him to go to the VA to get benefits, which he didn't want to do because he didn't right. want to show that discharge paper.
Yes.
I ordered him to change his discharge paper
yep.
to one that didn't have that.
Yep.
I ordered him to get the health benefits. I yep. ordered him to go and get a degree.
Right.
And he graduated summa cum laude, president's right. list, honors roll. And, you know, sometimes you find a relationship where you have what the person needs.
Yes. Yes.
And that possibly relates right. to where the to be selfless sometimes. Sometimes you're selfish. You know, I put up right. my hand like that, glass of water appears in it.
Yep.
Talking about crying, yes. I get out of the shower and the towels haven't been warmed.
Oh, no. Oh, now, wait a minute.
Traumatic. You have to be selfless when somebody else has a greater need at that right. moment than you.
You have to go where the need is strongest.
Yeah.
It's our nature. I mean, I'm a giving sort of man. I am sometimes a service dog. I assert that you are too. And yet, what you did is you showed great strength and courage in supporting him in excellence. That's what it's called. That's what I do with the slaves. I support them in excellence. What you just said was a rather strong example, but one of the reasons why I make a promise to my submissives, all of them, I say, I will not turn into someone else. I'm not going to suddenly become, you know, this monster who doesn't care about you. I will be hardcore. I may hurt you, but I will never harm you. Okay, there's a big distinction there. Because I know what is possible, but they also are teaching me what's possible too. Each submissive trains you. This is a big one, okay? Each submissive, with their needs, with their fantasies, teach you how to be a better sir. And the process never stops. Never. Ever. I'm always learning new stuff. I have to. I have to keep up with these lively creatures. But more than that, it opens up my mind to new possibilities. I was adamant that there was no fucking way on earth that I could ever be a master. Because masters are assholes. I've seen it so many times. And I'm not an asshole, so I clearly can't be a master. I had, I had the worst case of imposter syndrome you could imagine. Because I've had so many people tell me, there's something wrong with you. You should not be that way. Don't you be that way. Nobody gave me agreement that the way that I was perfectly fine. Well, I finally had my big epiphany at least three years back, with Butchman's experience that happens in Arizona. And I told everybody, I said, I take ownership for my mastery. I said, from this day on, I will no longer have shame about being sweet and masterful. Believe it or not, it was that recent.